Today at Reader's Corner, Marcia Barrett, author of Nelson Rockefeller's Dilemma, The Fight to Save Moderate Republicanism. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. As the civil rights movement intensified in the early 1960s, Nelson Rockefeller envisioned a Republican Party recommitted to Lincoln and his heritage as a defender of black equality. But the party's extreme right wing, encouraged by its successful outreach to segregationists before and after the nomination of Barry Goldwater in 1964, pushed the party to the right. In her new book, Nelson Rockefeller's Dilemma, The Fight to Save Moderate Republicanism, Marcia Barrett details how the standard bearer of moderate republicanism lost the battle for the soul of the party of Lincoln, leading to mainlining of white grievance populism to the post-civil rights era. Marcia Barrett is an assistant professor of history at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. Her articles have appeared in the Journal of Policy History, New York History, and Politico. Marcia Barrett, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, Marcia, the way I look at it, there's two groups of people out there listening to what we have to say, what you have to say, most importantly, and that is those who say, I remember Nelson Rockefeller. Yeah, he was the guy that. And then there are those who say, Nelson who? Nelson Rockefeller. Name sounds familiar, but I don't think I was around. So maybe the first thing to do is to have you give us just a thumbnail sketch of Nelson Rockefeller as the political career is concerned.
Sure. Well, the reason why, if you don't know who Nelson Rockefeller is, but you recognize his name, it's in part because, likely because he was the grandson of John D. Rockefeller. And, you know, he had this rarefied and rather unique upbringing. But when he was relatively young, he decided to get into politics and first served in the Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Dwight Eisenhower presidential administrations. And then he had limited ability to bring about change in as an appointed figure and decided to run for elected office. So in 1958, he ran for the governorship of New York and won and remained in office from 1959 to 1973 before he became Gerald Ford's vice president. And he was probably the most prominent moderate Republican of the 20th century.
And he didn't stay as Gerald Ford's vice president, right?
Well, he finished out Ford's term as vice president. But when Ford sought a nomination and election in his own right, Rockefeller was encouraged, right, we could say, right, to get off the ticket.
So you mentioned that Rockefeller worked for both Democrats and Republicans. There's one little section in your book where you ask the question, how did he justify being a Republican rather than a Democrat when his friends would always point out that he seemed to hang out more with Dems than Republicans?
Well, one answer that he would give is that he was born a Republican, which is very true. And he had these long connections to the origins of the party and also the, you know, the Gilded Age Republican Party as well on his mother's side. But for Rockefeller, we also believe that, you know, he sort of maybe similar to Dwight Eisenhower, who called it modern republicanism. He thought that in modern society, the government needed to help people to solve problems that were bigger than they could solve by themselves. And he thought that the government should be active and involved in people's lives. So Rockefeller embraced the ideas of the New Deal, for example, but oftentimes, right, quibbled over the details, right, how you're going to fund this program. You know, he wanted to emphasize the state control over programs rather than going first to the federal government, for example. But he thought that his version of republicanism, Rockefeller republicanism, was, you know, central to the identity of the Republican Party, even if many small government conservatives disagreed.
So tell us about Rockefeller republicanism in terms of civil rights, what he stood for over this period of time that he ended up being a candidate for president in 1960, 64, and 68. 64 seems to be the most interesting year that you covered in your book. But What does it mean that Rockefeller Republicanism and civil rights?
Well, maybe in the simplest terms, Rockefeller was very much a supporter of the civil rights movement and the demands that the civil rights movement was making to open up society. And he supported the federal government intervening in that area, and also in state and local governments to advance civil rights.
And as I understand it, he had an aide that gave him a memo, and that memo may have had a lot to do, or at least something to do, with how he decides to proceed with his civil rights agenda. I think the guy's name was Hinman.
Yes, that's right. Part of the sort of the anecdote I use to open up, or at least in part of the introduction, is writing about essentially a warning that Rockefeller received from his staff members that, they made the case that that Rockefeller was well known for supporting civil rights, and that he had this connection to the African-American community. When he campaigned for governor of New York, he made numerous trips to Harlem and Black communities to appeal to Black voters. And Hinman makes this case to him that, and his advisors make this case that he needs to be cautious, that he isn't considered to be too aligned with civil rights activists like Martin Luther King Jr. That this would turn off white conservatives in the Midwest, for example, but really, I think, beyond the Midwest. So, but and apart from that, part of the, reason why his advisors like him and are telling him to be cautious is that, Rockefeller really wanted to make this civil rights issue a core of the modern day, mid-20th century Republican Party. And, there are signs, though, that there are Republicans who were looking to cater to segregationists in the South, for example, as they were upset, essentially, by the National Democratic Party's embrace of civil rights and federal civil rights legislation.
Well, I want to get back to that in a moment, because I think the 64 convention, which nominates Barry Goldwater, is the most fascinating part of Rockefeller's interaction with his party and with the South. But I want to cover one other thing about Rockefeller as a guy who wasn't just about civil rights. You have a portion there in your book where you talk about a speech that he delivers to 300 executives of Standard Oil, which, as you said, is his granddaddy's company that John D. Rockefeller founded. Tell us about that speech regarding the role of corporations. And it really does tell that this is a guy who was moderate in all ways, I guess you could say.
That's a very good point. So long before he's in electoral politics, during the New Deal era, before he joined the Roosevelt administration, Rockefeller goes to a meeting of the managers of Standard Oil and warns them that essentially that corporations and businesses like Standard Oil have brought the New Deal state, right, and all of this sort of this new regulatory state brought it on itself by trying to extract too much from the people of the United States, but also in Latin America in pursuit of profits. So he's calling on corporations to, be more invested in the public good, and essentially saying that if you don't, the government is going to step in, and that it's the appropriate role of the government to step in. This is what is described as, being very distasteful to many of the people in attendance. But, Rockefeller very much believed, another great comparison would be to, right, Theodore Roosevelt, that the government needed to be powerful enough, large enough, active enough to take on corporations and ensure that, the average day American has a chance to make their way in society.
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt, the trust buster, was really Nelson Rockefeller's role model in some ways, wasn't he?
Yes, definitely. Franklin Roosevelt, I think personally, had a great affinity for him as well. But Theodore Roosevelt, even well into his career, he really saw his example as one that, he wanted to live up to as he especially sought the presidency.
You're listening to Marcia Barrett. She's a professor at the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, and she is the author of Nelson Rockefeller's Dilemma, the fight to save moderate republicanism. So let's go to 1964, when Nelson Rockefeller wanted the nomination for president from his Republican Party. But I think at this point, we can kind of flip and have you tell us what the Republican Party looked like and what the challenges within it were, starting with perhaps the Scott Amendment. It was an amendment offered, but I'll let you take it from there.
I'm like going to say it's a little bit of a long story.
Go right ahead.
Well, one of the most famous or infamous moments in Rockefeller's history is sort of the accounts of him going before the Republican National Convention 1964 in San Francisco's Cow Palace and calling the party out for allowing extremism into the party and him getting heckled and booed and rejected on this national stage. But that was actually the culmination of a year-long effort after Rockefeller in the July of 1963 had made this public statement, essentially warning the Republican Party not to embrace the extremism of groups like the John Birch Society or the Ku Klux Klan, and that it was taking the party away from its principles, and that those extremists, they were gravitating toward Barry Goldwater. So he doesn't say that Barry Goldwater is an extremist, but essentially, almost making this case that perhaps Goldwater is being taken advantage of. And this makes people very, very, certainly Goldwater supporters and a lot of Republicans, upset. So at the convention, you have this effort amongst some moderates to prevent Barry Goldwater from getting the nomination. And one way to do that was to fight for sort of more assertive language in the Republican platform in support of civil rights and positions that were not in alignment, I guess you could say, with Barry Goldwater. So one of those amendments, the one that received actually the most discussion, was around this question of how supportive the Republican Party should be in terms of civil rights in its platform plank. But Rockefeller, he speaks at the convention, right, because he wants to have this addition to the platform that where you have the Republican Party saying, we reject extremism. But this was, not really a popular idea, even amongst moderates and a lot of establishment Republicans. Like Dwight Eisenhower, for example, would tell, counseled Republicans, let's not name names. Let's not focus on these extremist organizations. And that's what's happening and sort of culminates in Rockefeller's confrontation with Goldwater supporters in the convention hall in 1964.
So you quote one journalist, Michael Kramer, as saying that the 68 election was a very special tragedy for Rockefeller.
Yes. So part of what I discovered is that it might be easy to overlook that 68 campaign for Rockefeller because it had this rocky start after, George Romney had dropped out of the race. Rockefeller wasn't sure if he should run at all. And essentially, Rockefeller decides he's going to run for office and then focuses on civil rights and an effort to end urban uprisings after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination. And, Rockefeller makes this case. He sort of presents himself as he did in 1960, for example, in 1964, that he was more moderate Republican who, wanted to tackle, right, this big issue like the decline of urban centers. And you could say he failed. I mean, it failed, but his campaign failed spectacularly. People wondered why he even went to Miami to the 1968 Republican National Convention. But essentially, that was sort of the last gasp. And it's not to say that Rockefeller hadn't made some adjustments when it came to a number of his positions by the time he reached 1968. But at his core, he was still calling for this sort of activist government that was seeking to help the most vulnerable in society. And when he lost, he decided it's time to take a new course. And he looked to Richard Nixon as an example of what was viable and what worked. And he started to sort of slough off the elements of himself that had made him a moderate Republican.
So before we get on to that, because I want to talk specifically about the things Rockefeller winds up doing that pretty much erases that moderate from his name, I guess, for some people anyway. You wrote an essay for Time magazine before the Republican convention that nominated Trump in earlier this year. It was about Rockefeller's speech to the 1964 Republican convention, which we're talking about here. Tell us a little bit about the purpose of your essay, I guess, because it does bear relevance to what's going on today in America.
Yes, I wanted to draw attention to that 64 convention, right? It was the 60 years later. Because something that I find so striking about that convention is that, you know, yes, Rockefeller spoke up and was rejected, but there were a number of moderates and establishment figures who really didn't say much at all, or if they did, they tempered their words and tried to deny that something fundamental had changed in the Republican Party. When right, you have this grand moment where the civil rights movement is successful in terms of, you know, the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and then just weeks later, days later, the Republican Party nominates one of the few Republicans in Congress who oppose civil rights legislation. And this is Rockefeller says this is a major issue. The Republican Party is sort of losing itself. And many establishment figures said, well, you know, we're just going to let Goldwater have his shot. Let's have his supporters have their shot and not really call out what was or speak about what was happening. So for me, that moment is really significant because I think there was a culture of silence, essentially, that develops in the Republican Party because Rockefeller paid dearly for speaking out. And it was already a number of Republicans saying, let's be careful about expressing dissent. So now, right, we've reached this point where we have a Republican Party where if you don't support Donald Trump in all areas, someone might say you are not a Republican at all, and sort of pushing out that diversity of thought. I think this is sort of that process that you see happening with Rockefeller just sort of blossoms and it helps to create the Republican Party we have today.
It certainly does, and I can see why you would compare 64 to 2024. Let's talk about this right turn that Rockefeller makes. He's been beaten down for any number of years by a party that tells him he's too liberal, by a party that says we're trying to ingratiate ourselves with the South, and you're not helping any with your pro-civil rights stance. So I guess Rockefeller, as governor, decides that maybe there's something he can do about that. And I'm sure it also has a lot to do with the internal politics and the criminal problems facing the state of New York in those years. But let's start with drug policies. That clearly is one area you cover in your book where Rockefeller takes his move to the right.
Well, you know, that's probably maybe one of the most interesting case studies because, right, you have this, especially in African-American communities, in urban communities in New York, you know, going back to the 1950s and perhaps earlier, there's this expression of concern about, illegal drug sales and drug use in African-American communities and that the state, law enforcement wasn't doing enough to fix this problem or deal with this problem. So there is this call among some African Americans, certainly for the government and someone like a Rockefeller to do more. But and Rockefeller does decide to make this issue sort of a cornerstone of his reelection campaigns, like in 66 and 70, 1970, for example. But he addresses the issue and can get some of his African American advisors to support this effort. But he makes this case to suburban voters, white conservative voters in New York in particular, but especially in suburban communities, that the drug problem was a scourge that was going to that was being spread by criminals, and that it was going to end up in the suburbs, and it was going to touch their children. And he really sort of focuses on this effort to criminalize drug use, when earlier in his governorship he took more of a therapeutic approach. So it's one of those things where it's sort of interesting that Rockefeller can make this sort of the issue of drugs, this sort of he can make you he can raise this issue as a way to appeal to some black voters, but he can also turn this community into sort of this warning to other white New Yorkers in particular, that you need to do something to stamp out this problem. So ultimately you see this transition when Rockefeller, where he goes from a more therapeutic approach to a reactionary approach that actively turns away scientific evidence, expert analysis on how to treat drug abuse, and how to deal with these issues, or to recognize that there weren't really any clear and simple answers, and instead offers to the populace a very simple and clear answer. We're going to lock them all up. Whether you are addicted to drugs and selling them to maintain your own habit, or you are, sort of the worst of predatory drug dealers, you should all go to jail for life. Initially, his proposals were very, very extreme, and even called for the death penalty for, or at least talked about a death penalty for drug dealers. So that's one of the areas where you can see this shift, where Rockefeller is now equipping the state to, sort of almost, equipping the state to, as I say, attack, but certainly enforce these much harsher laws on parts of the community in New York, sort of like turning that idea of the active state that he had imagined initially on its head.
You're listening to Marcia Barrett here at Reader's Corner. We're talking about her book, Nelson Rockefeller's Dilemma, The Fight to Save Moderate Republicanism. Marcia Barrett is a history professor at the University of Illinois. Marcia, let's turn to welfare reform. That seems to be the other key area where Rockefeller, knowingly or unknowingly, decides that this is the way to spruce up his credentials to a more conservative party.
That's right. And the issue of direct aid to the poor had been a major point of conflict, of tension between Rockefeller and the Republican Party in Newark from the moment he was about to be nominated in 1958. Right, there was this call to there had been this effort among some conservative Republicans to adopt rules that are essentially like a residency requirement, that if you had not lived in the state of New York for more than a year, you could not obtain public aid. Making this, because it was the premise here was that people from other regions were moving to New York expressly to go on welfare. And Rockefeller had rejected that idea when he first became involved in electoral politics. He helped to oversee, there were some studies and commissions that looked into this issue during his first term in office, and found that these claims that people were moving to go on welfare, it was generally unfounded. There were very few people who were, the numbers just didn't add up. And that people, a lot of Republicans claimed that there was all of this cheating happening in the system. And again, there was no evidence to back up that there was this systemic problem or a significant problem of cheating in the system. So that's the initial conflict that Rockefeller has with the New York Republican Party, at the around 1960. But by the end of his, toward the end of his career, especially after he loses the 1968 nomination run, Rockefeller then essentially adopts all of these arguments that he had, that had been disproven while he was in office, that the system was becoming more expensive because of cheaters. People were migrating from Mississippi to go on welfare, playing into these the stereotypes about the essentially the black welfare queen, black women who are taking advantage of the system. And even though the numbers still didn't support these claims, Rockefeller made them, and they were very appealing to his voters. So I really see this moment where, again, Rockefeller turns away from the evidence and makes these reactionary claims. And it is true that social services, the cost of them had skyrocketed in New York. But you can certainly sort of, if you look at the percentages, the first thing you look at would not be welfare as the problem. But rather than say, oh, the state of New York, we've overextended ourselves because we were generous, Rockefeller says we were generous and welfare recipients cheated us in response. And even when he was even publicly confronted with evidence saying there's no proof of what you're saying, he continued down that path because it was politically popular.
I was surprised to see the number 42 come into your book. That would be a baseball player by the name of Jackie Robinson. I wonder if you could share with our listeners what Jackie did in this case. It's not about his exploits on the baseball field, that's for sure, but it's a really interesting sign of how engaged he was in his time.
Yes, that's right. Jackie Robinson was very much an activist and was interested in and invested in the civil rights movement and direct action activism for but for himself personally, he looked at this is so 1960. He looked at the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. He's like, I have some issues with both of these parties in terms of their civil rights record, but I think Republicans and Richard Nixon at that point, these are candidates and politicians that I think are more likely to help, and advance the cause of civil rights. So, Rockefeller then, I mean, sorry, Robinson looks at Rockefeller and sort of sees him as this opportunity, sort of a sign that the Republican Party, if it nominated Rockefeller, could really become this partner of the civil rights movement. So Robinson personally, he helps Rockefeller and works in Rockefeller's reelection campaigns. He serves as an advisor to Rockefeller. And what he plays this really important role in my book because they have these exchange this exchange of letters and this ongoing conversation about why Robinson thought that Rockefeller was such this really sort of point of light and this sort of real point of like he was this sign of hope that the Republican Party really could advocate for African American rights. And then as Robinson sees this change in Rockefeller, he talks to him about it. And we have and we have these letters in the archive that you actually can trace that conversation. And when a number of black people would have turned away from Rockefeller because really sort of disheartened by the choices he had made, Robinson was disheartened as well, but he reached out to Rockefeller. And you sort of see in my mind the value of having relationships that are with people who have who don't have the same background as you, have different
Sure.
different ideas and different commitments, and that you can have that kind of ongoing conversation, and that's why I think this was really it ended up being a really important point for me in the book to include sort of Robinson's view of Rockefeller as he progressed in his career.
It was most interesting. Well, we have run out of time, Marcia, but I want to thank you for joining us here at Reader's Corner. Most importantly, I want to thank you for writing the book, Nelson Rockefeller's Dilemma: The Fight to Save Moderate Republicanism. And this history professor from the University of Illinois, Marcia Barrett, is the author. Great to talk with you. Thanks again, and we look forward to what you're up to next.
Thank you. This is wonderful. I really enjoy talking to you. I appreciate it.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The engineer for today's show is James Baker, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Custer. Please join me next week at Reader's Corner, where we'll continue talking to authors who make a difference in the reading world.
What happens in Washington? The NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.